This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And I have such a great day today. Two authors who, well, I will tell you, I talk about the golden threads that connect me to authors, and I've got golden threads all over the place today. My first guest, this is so funny. I was begging publicists. You know, they send me so many books. I get 10, 12, sometimes 20 books a week. And they say, pick which ones you want. And I kept telling them, send me something that will make me smile. Send me something that I will fall in love with. And then I get this wonderful book. I'm holding it up to the camera for anybody who's watching on YouTube. And it is called My What If Year. And the author is Alicia Fernandez Miranda. And oh boy, oh boy, I am so happy to welcome you to the program, Alicia.
Patsy, I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Wow. As we say in Yiddish, beshert, it was meant to be.
I love it. My mom is Jewish, actually, so I've heard that one before.
Yeah, so you heard it. And when something's beshert, it's beshert. Because, I'll tell you, from the first page. Now, I will... There's so many things I love about you. I love the whole story. I love everything. But I must say that it starts off so beautifully. I was so thrilled because... let's just say, well, it starts off with somebody drinking. Now, I'm not a great drinker, well, although I have been known to imbibe, but it starts off at the Bloomsbury Hotel in London. Now, when I made my first trip to London, that's where I stayed.
Really?
Yeah, of course, because as a reader, as somebody who was always reading, and I came to London for the purpose of buying a house near where Jane Austen lived, was born, actually. So, of course, where did I want to go to stay? I mean, I knew the hotel from reading books, and so there I am at the Bloomsbury looking for an estate agent to take me out to the countryside so I could find a home, a cottage, actually. I already knew I wanted a cottage. So when I got this book, and there you are at the Bloomsbury, drinking. Now, you are drinking in the Coral Room. They didn't have the Coral Room in those days. And I was so sweet and innocent. I wasn't drinking a great deal in those days. Later on, though, whenever I would go to London, I didn't have to stay in a hotel. But when I'd meet people, that's the hotel where I would meet people.
It is a beautiful place, a beautiful place. And I love that story. I can't believe it.
It's just, you know, it's so gorgeous. When I think of being at the hotel, and I was really scared. It was my first trip to London. I was so young. I had saved my money. I had $25,000 to buy a house in England. Now, so you can imagine that's a few years ago. but at 11, I decided I was going to live near where Jane Austen was born, which is another golden thread that links me to you, because when you packed up to go to school, what did you take with you? Your Jane Austen books.
Of course.
So there's so many things. But let's get back to the drinking. Now, I do know, and in those days... things are different, but I know in those days the bars did open very early, so you could really start early there. They used to close, of course. They had that closing in the afternoon, but everything about this book started from the lovely time sitting in the Coral Room, which, by the way, I had a look at it. I had to have a look at it. It is gorgeous, but that was opened just, I don't know, about 10 years ago, maybe, something like that. So tell us about that day.
Oh, well, you know, I was with my two best friends in the world. We had sort of managed to steal away this weekend. So I was living in London at the time. My kids were not that far away from me, but I had managed to get away for the weekend with two of my best friends, and we were just having one of those great nights where you're just talking and dreaming, and the martinis are helping with that, and we're in this beautiful, beautiful space. And, you know, we were all kind of getting close to 40, and we were starting to talk about what it is that we would do if we could do anything. And I sort of articulated this thought that had been in the back of my head that I hadn't shared with anybody about wanting to go and experience what it was like to work in the theater, especially musical theater. It was not something I had ever done before, but I knew it was something I wanted to do. And I said, you know, I'll do anything. I will scrape gum from off the bottom of the seat. I will fold playbills. I will clean up garbage. I would do absolutely anything to be part of this experience. My friend Rebecca said, yeah, you know, like you could be an intern. And that is where the idea for my What If Year was born, this idea that maybe I could go be an intern.
Wow. Well, you know, a few martinis, into a few martinis, all things become possible.
Very true.
And you made it happen. So it's just, as I said, I was telling the publicist, please, please send me something that will put a smile on my face. And then I get this book and I'm like laughing through the whole thing.
Oh, thank you. That makes me so happy.
Because you did some really wonderful things. And it is just, I think it's such a good thing for women to read this book, to see that, yes, you can try everything. And I just wish young women would read it and say, yeah, I should try a lot of different things, because you learn so much.
Absolutely.
So tell us how you started this adventure, and then we'll go on.
You know, I woke up the next morning, you know, with the hangover from the martinis, but the idea was kind of still there, and it was coming at a time in my life where I had achieved a lot of professional success, I had a very, you know, satisfying personal life, and I had all the things that I was supposed to have, and yet I was feeling stuck, I was feeling unhappy, I couldn't figure out why, and, you know, CEO of my own company, and I just felt, this can't be it, I need to find what else is out there, and I decided to go forward by looking backwards. So, you know, this idea kind of snowballed from sharing it with my girlfriends that night, and it became, could I spend a year taking mini sabbaticals from my real job and my real life and go out and intern at all the jobs I wanted to do when I was a kid? I had minored in art history. Could I do an internship in the art world? I was, of course, obsessed with musical theater, so could I do something in theater? You know, there were things like marine biologist and working at Disney and, you know, being captain of a shrimp boat. That one never made it very far, but that was on the list, too. But just to try these things and have these experiences and see what happened at the end of it. And so I set out to do that. I spent 8 months after the martini night thinking it was absolutely not possible, but kind of dreaming about it all of the time. And then I finally decided to take the first step. So I said, all right, I'm going to put this first month in my calendar. I'm going to say I'm out of the office, and I'm going to plan. I'm going to ask everybody I know for an internship. And eventually I got the opportunity to go shadow two shows in New York, one off-Broadway and one on-Broadway. They were both about to open. And I took off for my first internship, left my husband and kids behind in London, and I went to New York on February 29th, 2020. So if you're thinking back to that time in the grand scheme of the world, you can imagine what happened next.
Wow. Right in the middle of the pandemic, you decide on an adventure.
Correct.
And in New York City, of all places.
Yes. But, you know, still at that early time where there were plenty of people saying, oh, this is all going to blow over. And, you know, I kind of had my fingers in my ear and just was saying, no, this is fine, because I got to go and live my childhood dream. I was sitting in on rehearsals with this two incredible casts that were putting on these productions. I was trying very hard to make myself useful, but I was having the experience I had always dreamed of having. And so when theaters did eventually close down mid-March 2020, man, that was a real blow.
So when you got when you got to the first one and you said, "Hi, I'm an intern. I'm just double that 20 and there here
you are." Exactly.
What was it like? And tell us, what did they say to you?
Oh, man. So, I mean, I was a nervous wreck because even though I had lots of confidence in other areas of my professional life, I had never done anything like this before. I had only ever been an audience member of the theater besides, you know, one time I was Hotbox Girl number 2 in a college production of Guys and Dolls. So, you know, it was so new, and I was surrounded by actual geniuses. On my first day of my first internship, I literally ran into Stephen Sondheim on the way in and nearly knocked him over. He was 90. You know, this was like, oh my God, I could not believe this happened to me. So I'm surrounded by these brilliant, brilliant geniuses. And so at first I was very nervous and I really wanted to be helpful. I didn't want to step on anybody's toes. I didn't want to just seem like this, you know, middle-aged woman coming in and swanning around and doing nothing. So I started by doing what I always do when I enter a new room, desperately trying to make friends with people and trying to get them to let me take on some tasks for them and be helpful and being as kind as I possibly could. I used my dad's constant refrain, which was kill him with kindness, and just really trying to absorb as much as I could and to be someone who they could rely on to help out with, even though I did not look like the typical intern.
Well, I love this thing from your dad. Yes, kill them with kindness. It really works and in so many ways, because sometimes it just drives them crazy. They start wondering about themselves. They start saying, if she's so kind, why am I such a miserable person? You
know? It's really hard, I think, if someone is smiling at you all the time to not eventually smile back, even if it's just to make them go away.
That's true. It's wonderful. Wow. That's exciting. So now, when you got to New York, did you tell us of where you stayed and what was that for you?
Oh, gosh. Well, I started out in this apartment. It was an Airbnb, and you know, I thought it was making all. It was looked very, very pretty online. It said it was above an upscale restaurant, and of course, I arrived there. The whole place reeks of marijuana, and I'm over like a Philly cheesesteak bar somewhere in the West Village that plays music at obscene volumes until 4 a.m. So I think I'm finally like, here I am. First of all, I'm like, I'm free from my kids for a few weeks. I'm going to sleep as much as possible. No, that was not in the cards for me. So I was there first. And then eventually I had to get out of there. And so I ended up at the Ace Hotel in Midtown, which is a hotel that has a coffee shop and a bakery and a bagel shop in the lobby. So didn't even have to get out of my pajamas. It was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I think if I was going to be in a place above, I would want to be above a Chinese restaurant because I could eat a lot of Chinese food.
Delicious.
But that's so. You know, when you're young and you do these things, I stayed in all sorts of weird, strange places. But when you're a little bit older, so. You want a few more creature comforts.
That is very true. I wish I was the type of person who could say I was willing to stay anywhere. And I would, for one night, I'd do almost anything, but more than that isn't much.
Exactly. So what other adventures did you have on, well, when you got to the Broadway show, this was, you know, it's so exciting. Now, I have some experience in the theater backstage because my children became actors, and they were always in the theater, and I landed up being the one making, you know, the working on the stage production side, and I actually built a dragon, a 20-foot dragon.
Oh, wow.
One time out of paper mache. So it was children's theater, but, you know, it was professional children's theater. So we had a lot of work backstage, and I love it. I love being backstage. Isn't it exciting?
It's so vibrant, and it is just, you just feel so lucky to be surrounded by all of these people making incredible art all the time. I mean, I would love, love, love to go back and do it all again. I think if there was one internship that I would repeat, it would be that one. And I, just in case anyone's listening, I'm an excellent intern. You can have me come back.
Hey, anybody listening to this program who hears this, I will join her. I will go with Alicia. We will be intern.
We'll be a double act, Cassie. This is perfect.
What we would be terrific because we can smile like crazy.
Exactly.
Oh, and we might have a few martinis. Just to keep us smiling.
After the show, of course.
Because the chaos behind stage that people don't understand, but it's such controlled chaos. Everybody knows their job. Everybody knows what has to be done. It's really a miracle sometimes when you think of the final production that the audience sees and what goes on behind stage.
Yes. That's kind of the beauty of it. There's all of these pieces that as an audience member I had never gotten to see. And, you know, part of me was worried, like, oh, if I see what happens behind the scenes, is that going to change how I feel when I go see this amazing production? But it didn't. It made me value and appreciate it even more than I did before.
Exactly. Once you've been backstage and you've seen these people, and it's all of the people who never get on stage, all of the people who put it together, their dedication to their work, their love for their work, it's so impressive, and you're right, when you get up, you know, one day you're back in the audience, and you watch it, you think, wow, these people are amazing.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, that was fun, so you had fun in New York, and we've got some more adventures. Oh, and we're running out of time, so we have to run through these. You're going to have to come back. You're going to have to come back.
Okay, twist my arm, Patsy. I guess I will.
Okay, so what's the next adventure?
Oh, my gosh, I know. Well, I'll zip through. So, you know, the pandemic happened. Theaters closed down, flights were canceled, and I had to rush home, cut my internship short. My kids were no longer in school, and all of a sudden we were in lockdown. And so I was not willing to give up on my project, so I managed to do a virtual internship during the very kind of early stages of the first UK lockdown, which was sort of April 2020, and I worked for a retro dance and fitness company doing mostly market research, so trying out all the different virtual fitness classes that were now available in this new world of online fitness, and I managed to do that and did a lot of weird and wonderful classes through that time. And then I was kind of on a roll. I did two more internships. I worked for a contemporary art dealer in central London, so buying and selling painting and sculpture. And then I worked at a beautiful hotel and restaurant on the Isle of Skye in rural Scotland, being very bad at every task that was assigned to me.
Well, let's go back to the art dealership. I have to hear about this. Now, was this also virtual, or you actually were in...
This was in person.
In person. That's what I love.
Me too. I mean, everything felt, just going back to galleries was, you know, amazing after having been kind of locked down for so long. And I was doing a little bit of everything, a lot of research, learning about different artists and different paintings and sculptures and what their provenance was. I was doing a lot of database cleanup. And then my favorite part was that I got to go to all sorts of galleries and exhibitions. I was picking up art and dropping off art and just kind of like having a marvelous time.
Oh, that's a wonderful, wonderful job. Absolutely fantastic. And as an artist of some, well, I don't know, I do some dabbling. I love the idea of working in a gallery. But now let's get to Scotland, because I love Scotland. I spent a lot of time in Scotland. My husband and I, eventually I was married, and then my husband was a pilot, and we had a small plane, and we used to fly out of an old RAF field up to Scotland. We do it all the time because we love Scotland. He had a good friend who had a smoked salmon. They smoked salmon business. Mm. So, I mean, we'll fly for smoked salmon. So I love Scotland. And we used to stay often in the George Hotel in Edinburgh. So I love Scotland, and I love luxury hotels. But tell us about the one that you worked at.
Well, it is a marvelous place. It's called Kinloch Lodge, and it's on the loch with a mountain behind it on the Isle of Skye, which has more sheep than people in terms of its population, but a very, very beautiful place. And so I came on to do a rotational internship, which means I spent a week kind of in the kitchen and the restaurant. I spent a week front of house, so checking people in and out. I spent a week in the office filing. I filed at all my internships. I got very good at it by the end. And then I spent a week kind of floating around. I was working events and weddings. I was working at the bar. I was stoking fires and all sorts of these very romantic Scottish things. And I loved it all, but I really found in that something I could not get better at, no matter how hard I tried. I was dropping food. I was spilling soda bottles on myself. I checked a couple into the wrong room where somebody else was already in there.
Ooh.
You know, it was all sorts of mishaps. And am not surprised that while I remain very good friends with them and have actually helped them write a cookbook, they have never asked me to come back and work at the hotel.
Well, I don't know. Now they're going to comp you. Once this book, you know, everybody starts buying this book, everybody's going to want to go to the hotel, hoping that there are some more interns working there, dropping trays, setting themselves on fire. I don't know. It's so much fun. Now, I worked for the Hotel Intercontinental. So I love the hotel business, and I know all the different parts of a hotel business, and it was so much fun. I loved it so much, and then to read your story about your experiences, I think it's hilarious.
Thank you so much, Patsy, and thank you for calling it fun, because that's what I wanted. I wanted to write a book that would be the kind of book I like to read, and I love fun books. I love books that make me smile and laugh and... yes, make me think, but bring some joy and entertainment into my life. So I'm so glad you said that. Thank you so much.
And I'm so glad you use the word joy. Well, you know, it's exactly what I said. When I was really, I was almost really getting desperate. I'm rereading old books that made me smile. And then I get this because I just needed it. And with all the connections that we have of all the things that, so many things that you love, I love, and I think it's just such a thrill that you wrote this. I don't know if at the time, the day you started it, you said, well, you know, this is going to make a great book.
Well, you know, I didn't ever know that I was actually going to be able to write a whole book, but I mentioned it to some people at the beginning because it was like a very convenient excuse. I think the idea that I was going off to do all these internships for no reason besides the fact that I wanted to, that was like, people felt like that was very transgressive. But if I said, oh, I'm going off to do this, but I'm going to maybe write a book about it one day, all of a sudden that became like very acceptable.
Yeah, then that's it. Yeah, well, it's research. Research. Writers have to do research. And,
exactly.
You know, it's tax deductible too. So do you realize that at all? I don't know.
I wish I would have known that in advance.
Yeah. I mean, this is the wonderful thing about being a writer doing some, you know, great research. It's tax deductible here in America. I don't know. Yeah, I know you're from Miami, but I don't know where you file your taxes. But yeah, it's tax deductible. So, and the wonderful thing about it, you know, some people might say, "Well, oh, this is out of reach." You know, I have, as you said, you have kids, you have husband, you have and blah, blah. But it is still even doable on a small scale if you have these ideas in your head. You might not be able to take off and, you know, go to Scotland, but you can do internship in your own local theaters. You can work in your own luxury hotel in your area. All of these things, you can have this experience and you can have this fun on a smaller scale.
You can volunteer. You can take an art class. There's so many ways, I think, to find those things that are part of your story and part of who you are and reconnect with them if you've lost them. I mean, that's where I was, you know. I had really lost a lot of the things that brought me so much joy in my life. And I do use the word joy because I think that's kind of what I'm doing now. I'm trying to chase those joyful things after this experience. And it's so easy to do that, even though I know it sometimes seems really scary to do something that might not be comfortable or that you might fail at, but it's just so worth it, even if it's a small thing.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Do it today.
You are, I think you're an inspiration. So what's
your
website people should find you? Just
You can find me at aliciaesmiranda.com, and that's A-L-I-S-H-A. And you can buy my What If Year anywhere books are sold. You can even listen to my lovely voice read it for the audiobook, if that's what you like.
Oh, yes. I haven't done that yet. Oh, my goodness. And then I'm going to get some giggles. Oh, I think you're fantastic, Alicia. I hope and I think, yeah, it's funny. I've got two authors today. You, because it's Beshert, it was meant to be. And my next author is also a Beshert author, something meant to be. I think your book, I think her book, should both be put into movies. Movies that I see in my head. When I see a book in my head, and it's a movie, it's a film, it's a streaming video, this will make a wonderful, wonderful, and fun film. So I hope that you get a movie deal.
Thank you, Patsy. Put that out in the universe and let's make it happen.
I am going to put it out in the universe. I mean, literally, I'm putting it out in the universe. I'm going to promote it as a book that I want to see somebody make a film of. Everybody listen. Okay. And again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. You are a joy, Alicia.
You are as well, Patsy. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye. Wow. I like this book. Okay, we're going to go to commercials, and then I'm going to be back. And my next guest is Karen Ingalls, and what a book she has. This is really exciting for me. Okay?
Hey, everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. February is here, and that means love is in the air. And something that I love to do, no matter what time of year it is read. And I love getting to read the book I Don't Want to Turn 3, written by Gramps Jeffrey. Gramps Jeffrey was inspired to write the book after being in COVID-19 isolation with his family, which gave him time to interact with his grandkids. Watching his grandkids grow when interacting with each other became the basis for the book. I Don't Want to Turn 3 tells the story of Jordan, who's about to turn 3 the next day. That means that he can't get away with the stuff that he's used to. I Don't Want to Turn 3 explores the interaction between family that's occurring in most households worldwide. I Don't Want to Turn 3 went on to win a Firebird Book Award and the Mom's Choice Award. As Jordan learns to be a little more kind in the story, let's all show a little kindness to our friends and family wherever we go. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, and I am thrilled to be talking to her because it is about a subject that I love so much. And I when I came across her book, I was so thrilled. And the name of the book is Davida, and it's called Davida, Model and Mistress of Augustus St. Gaudens. Karen Ingalls, you have written a fantastic book.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. It's my favorite book.
Well,
I've written.
Well, it's one of my favorite now. I tell you, I love this book. When I came across it, I had not read it before. It came out in what year?
2014.
That was before I had the radio program. And I hadn't read it, although I've read a lot about St. Gaudens. And one of the reasons that when I found the book and I said to myself, oh my goodness, how did I miss this? It is so wonderful.
I'm going to have to ask how you were a fan of Augustus St. Gaudens when so many people have no idea who he was.
Well, because I wanted to be a sculptress. Along the way in my life, whenever I had an opportunity, I took sculpting classes. And when I lived in England, my husband and I used to go to Paris quite often. So, mm-hmm. of course, there, they really appreciate sculptures. Sculptors are somebody they talk about as if they're still around, you know. So you get a lot of talk among, you know, in Paris about the value of sculptors and what they do. And I managed to see some studios. I actually walked in the streets where he worked, where he had his studio. So I knew all about him. Of course, I admired him. I actually tried to copy, imitate him. So I put that on the back burner for years. I hadn't, have done any sculpting. But then when I got this book, I was really thinking about it was all of this nonsense about them ripping down, great pieces of art, and mm-hmm. it drives me crazy. And so there I was thinking about the Farragut, and I was thinking about his wonderful, brilliant, this piece that he did about Admiral Farragut. And wow, if people come along and they don't understand, people see a sculpture in a garden, in a park, they'll stand in front of it and take a selfie. They don't understand mm-hmm. what's gone into it. The work, the talent, the struggle. And nobody did it better than St. Gaudens.
Oh, my goodness, thank you. I agree.
So you come, your story is all part of his life. So I'll let you tell the story of you're pronouncing it Davida?
I pronounce it St. Gaudens. My husband has a better handle on French, so he says Bon Gonon, or I don't do it justice. Most of us say St. Gaudens, unless you're in France, then they know how to say it.
But your book is about mm-hmm. about his model and about his mistress.
Yes.
So tell us how this book came about.
Well, St. Gaudens and his mistress, Davida, had one child, who is my grandfather. And my grandfather had two granddaughters. I'm one of them. Unfortunately, my sister has passed away. So my grandfather, being born in 1890, which was a time of many illegitimate, and that's what they were called, and referred to as bastards, and they were shunned and shamed. Very different from the world we live in today. And my grandfather never, ever spoke about his father or mother or his childhood or growing up. And I only found out through my grandmother a little bit and my dad, and then just doing research on my own.
So you take this story about what you done here, and you've written it in the first person, so you take it from her point of view. Tell us her real name.
Well, her real name is Albertina Hultgren. And to trace where she came from, we know she came from Sweden. We know that she came over with her mother, but we don't know where exactly in Sweden. It was a good friend and distant relative did a lot of research for me because she lives in Stockholm, but we couldn't get anything definite. And Albertina's mother was a great cook, and she and her sister became cooks for the St. Gaudens family. And that's how eventually my great-grandmother met St. Gaudens, and they fell in love, and he asked her to be his model. And at some point, he said, Albertina, that's not a good name for a model. That's just too many
syllables.
Whatever. Too Swedish or whatever. And I do know from research that he chose the name Davida because he said, you are as beautiful as the David sculpture by Michelangelo. So, but as far as how she came up with Johnson, Davida Johnson Clark, is fictionalized in my own imagination.
So Davida was, you know, I love the way that you've written the book in first person. You go into her life from a young girl, and what I related a lot to her because her dad was a lumberman, and my dad was a lumberman. My dad cut down a lot of trees in his life. So I had this immediate connection with her, her love of the forest, her love of, you know, of nature. And so you write this story, and, you know, St. Gaudens was famous in those days. I mean, everybody knew him. In those days, there wasn't anybody who didn't know him all across the country because, of course, he was doing these beautiful works of you know, great subjects. One of the things, of course, the Admiral Farragut, who was very important at that time. People knew about him. Of course, he did Abraham Lincoln. He did other people. So he was well known, made a lot of money, and his life was, his fact that he lived, you know, quite a long time in Paris, because that's where they did, you know, they had the studios there to make the big sculpture that he wanted. And he, of course, he was married, and his wife's name was Gussie.
Correct.
So it was, you know, a complicated marriage. She was going deaf, and I think she was shy. And then he comes along, and he falls in love with Davida.
When I wrote the book, well, actually, as a teenager, when I first really began to understand my heritage and the story, I was so enthralled with the love story. And for it to take place in the 1800s, and then all the art, It was just, to me, an incredible story. And I wanted, the main reason I wrote this story was to free my grandfather of the shame that he grew up with. And yes, he had passed away by the time, but I believe at some level he was able to release that shame. And Davida did not have an easy life being the mistress, and she loved Gus unconditionally, and she would have married him in a heartbeat. But he, which I have some difficulty with in looking hindsight, is that he chose his career over his love for DeVita. Again, we're talking the 1800s, and if he had left his wife, who was very wealthy in a very famous, well-established family, for DeVita, he might have lost a lot of commissions. And that was very important to him, obviously. So if all this had happened in the 21st century, the story would be very different. Another important thing that a lot of people don't know is that Rodin, who was in his 20s, was coming along with a whole new idea about sculpture. And he admired and loved St. Gaudens. And St. Gaudens mentored him. And they were very good friends. But our society turned away from the old traditional sculpting to what Rodin was introducing. And that's why a lot of people don't know St. Gaudens, but they know Rodin. The only people that know St. Gaudens are the coin collectors. I shouldn't say the only, but the majority.
Because, of course, he designed some of our most beautiful coins.
Mm-hmm. The $20 gold piece. And that was the last thing he did. And unfortunately, he died before it was put into circulation.
I wish I had a few of those. You know, it's hard because when you read about St. Gaudens, you know, everybody's complicated, and you do feel that, you know, he did love Gussie. They were close. She was there for him when things were difficult at the in the beginning, when her family actually didn't want him to, you know, court her. And she was adamant, and she loved him. So, you know, and I'm not so sure nowadays if things would be so different, because in some ways I think there are still men who stay married to very wealthy women just because it helps their careers.
Exactly.
So,
oh, sure.
You know, that's the thing about life. People don't change that much. You know, human nature is human nature. But I think that what's wonderful about your book, about DeVita, is that I think people should know about her and should know, well, how beautiful she was and what a woman she must have been, that she didn't make a scene. She didn't, you know, try to ruin his life. Today, my goodness, it would be a sexual harassment case. Like, you know.
Right.
But she was circumspect about it. She took it sort of in stride. I don't know, you know, as you said, your family probably did not save all the letters or everything that they might have.
Oh, no, yeah. When my grandmother died first, excuse me, and then my grandfather, and I was in the kitchen of their home, and my dad and his brother were going through papers, and they came across all the love letters, and they threw them away.
I know, people
and
do these things.
I was 16. If I had been in the living room and seen and heard, I would have said, no, I'll take them. I want to see them. But I was in the kitchen cleaning out stuff, and I didn't know until well after the fact, long time.
So, you know, that's the tragedy, and but it also makes for an interesting story. And I was talking to my previous caller, sometimes a book comes along, every once in a while a book will come along that if I had the money, I would option, I would take an option and try to turn this into a film, because this is a beautiful love story. Mm-hmm. And as you said, your grandfather, who lived his life with that idea of being a bastard, and you know, today we can say that word, but in the, you know, not that long ago, that word was still such a pejorative. Today, with people having babies all over the place, nobody calls anybody a bastard anymore.
No.
But, you know, so it's not the same thing. Although I would think that a lot of people who are, you know, feel that loss, that not so much shame, but the loss of the opportunities that could have been theirs. Now, so as I said, I think the book, you've written the book with such tenderness and as a love story, as a historical document, I think talking about Hussein Gardens is and about his work, and then about your grandmother's devotion to him. It's a beautiful story. Have you ever been to, you know, knowing the relationship, knowing the thing, have you ever been to the St. Gaudens National Park or State Park? It's a national park.
They're in Cornish. Yes.
So you've been to the national park.
Yes.
And you've walked and it.
I've walked it. My sister was alive at the time, and the two of us went with our husbands, and they welcomed us. I can't think of the name of the curator at the time, and introduced ourselves. We were very welcomed, and
it's a beautiful place. This is where he had
gorgeous.
His studio, and it's in Cornish, yep. New Hampshire, as I said, because I follow St. Gaudens. I have been there. It is so beautiful in the springtime. This is the perfect time to visit. There are gorgeous trees there. It's just lovely. And you can see so many of his works. I think they have maybe 100 of his works, you know, that you can see what he did and the talent.
Right.
And I think that I would love to make a film. If I won the lottery tomorrow, the first person I'd call is you.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I would take an option on this book.
Okay. All right. We'll go for it.
So keep your fingers crossed. If I win the lottery, I'll give you a book deal, film deal, because I think it's gorgeous. The writing is wonderful. It's so heartfelt. And your family... Well, I think your family does deserve the recognition and the knowledge that, you know, DeVita played an important part in his life and in his creation, and we can still see the work that he did using her as a model.
Right. So, I don't know how we are on time.
No, we're running out of time. But
okay.
What else?
Just very quickly, when I wrote this book, there were many times I had no idea. My fingers were just going across the keyboard. And I know DeVita was speaking through me and my fingers.
Well, that's what I felt as I'm reading it. I felt as if she was talking to you and talking to me. Because, as I said, in Paris... I followed his footsteps. I mean, I actually went to the houses where he lived. I went to the places where he worked. And,
we did too.
So I know, I really feel him. And when I got your book, I was so thrilled. And it's been an honor just to talk to you. And the name of the book is DeVita, Model and Mistress of Augustus St. Gaudens. And you have a sort of a companion book that is heartbreaking, actually.
Novi?
Yeah. That book is it's heartbreaking. But again, that's all sort of part of a film that I think could be made out of your life, your family's life, and definitely something to celebrate DeVita, because she deserves to be remembered.
I completely agree. I'm looking at her book cover right now, and Yeah. I think she's here in our room right now.
Well, I think she's in our heart. And I just thank you so much. I know, you know, most, after so many years, you don't get people who do interviews about a book, you know. Most people, you get a 1 month opportunity when a book is released, and nobody ever mm-hmm. asks you about it again. But
yeah.
I want to assure you that not only am I going to talk about the book and help promote the book, I also want to, you know, try to get it out there. Maybe, I think if they're looking for a new product, as we used to say in Hollywood, this is a product that I would grab onto, and they could make a terrific film, just terrific, between the Parasite and... Oh, and DaVita and everything. It would be wonderful. So thank you so much for being on the program today, Karen Ingalls.
And thank you.
And people, you can get this book on Amazon, and I will also put it up on my website. I want you to read this book. It's a really heartfelt book. Again, Karen Ingalls, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Be well. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this is why, you know, it's so much fun what I do. I don't look at if the book was a new release. I mean, I love getting new releases. I love talking to people on their pub day. It's always so exciting for me. But, and it's sort of, it becomes part of history. But to look back and to find books that are an absolute treasure, like DaVita is, a book about a young woman, a girl who comes from Sweden, a girl who loves running around in the forest, a happy childhood, a joyful childhood, and she falls in love with a man who's married. And that changes everything for her. She might have had a completely different life if that hadn't happened, but... In the end, also, he sculpted her, and his work lives on, too. So, anyway, it was a great, great thing to talk to Karen today. And everybody, just remember what I always tell you, that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book, or if you're very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry and one of her series. I'm in the mood for Haunted Haven right now because I'm thinking a lot about baseball because I am very upset and I do not like these enlarged bases. It's just irritating me. But get Carol J. Perry's series, Haunted Haven. It's wonderful. And again, meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. Okay, he saluted me. I'm glad he saluted me because I should have been a general. I would have been so great. And people, listen to what I said to Alicia Miranda. You can all still have exciting lives by just interning in local businesses and learning and having fun. Everybody, bye-bye now. Have a wonderful weekend and stay warm wherever it's cold up there. My goodness, people are going crazy. Bye-bye now.